Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's good, internet? It is August 7th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 86. And for once, I have an answer to what's good. For once, I know what is good in the world. It is chicken. Is this chicken dinner we're feasting on? Patrick, we did it.
We've done it in the canonical and non-canonical forms. We have two chicken dinners, one for ourselves and one for Crowbar and Sickle.
Yep. And it was, you know what? It was the most Crowbar and Sickle chicken dinner possible. For people who don't know what we're talking about, we've been streaming PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds for the last couple of months. We've done it 47 times. It was our 47th episode. And we finally got our on-stream victory. I'm excited to go back later and watch it and read the chat and see everyone get excited. But it was the most Crowbar and Sickle win imaginable because it was
We were in a low place going into that. We had three or four different really short runs.
Real short,
where
bad runs.
We did not kill anyone, made no real attempt to fight back. We mostly just rolled over and got shot in the face.
Well, speaking of rolling over, there was a point where literally the car we were driving in tipped and rolled over, and we almost like died there. Like the car was getting shot, and we managed somehow to
fortunately the car tipped, and we exited the car in a fashion where it became a piece of cover.
Exactly.
We got in. You were able to get us away. And even
somehow,
in escaping, we got shot at like three more times by different squads. It was something else.
That was amazing. And then we ended up in a situation where the circle was closing in onto a city, onto Milta, and we had to do all this like running through the city streets of Milta as gunfire was coming in from every direction, and we had to like, we ended up in this little tiny set of like five houses and a little tower, and it was just us in this house and two people in the tower, and it was 2-on-2, and they tried to run up on us, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, and we like picked a door to aim our guns at, because if they came in the other door, they would have had the jump on us, or at least we wouldn't have been able to react as quickly. And fortunately, the two of them went through the same door,
and that was their mistake.
We talked through the stream. We were talking through the other scenarios where it's not uncommon to get a chicken dinner and to win a match by default. And by default, I mean, like, let's say there are three people left, and you're playing solo, and two people get in a firefight. One guy goes down. The other gets injured, and then he gets caught behind the blue wall. And in the final moments of a match, the blue wall is taking out like 1/6 of your health, like every
powerful
second or half a second. Like, you cannot last. Like, you have to be pushed into the circle in order to have any chance to survive. And so we thought for a second, while we're guarded in this house, there's two people left other than us. Maybe they'll get in a firefight, and then we'll win that way. And it still would have been fine. We would have celebrated.
I would have counted, yeah.
Definitely would have counted. This but is a
so
much
good.
More satisfying win got a kill.
We each got a kill. At the final moments, it worked the way it was supposed to work.
How does it feel? How delicious is it? Is it a delicious chicken dinner?
So, like, I've gotten a lot of off-stream dinners at this point. Not a lot. I've got a handful of off-stream dinners. It always feels good, but, like, this was very high on my list of things that I've done this year in video games. Like, this really – I had, through this part of my year, in my own head, I'd already decided that my game of the year was Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Like it wasn't as close as I would let people think it was. Like, in my heart of hearts, I knew at the end of the day, Breath of the Wild was going to be my game of the year. That win makes me have to go actually start to rethink that. I don't know where I'm going to come out on the other end, but I've been gesturing that there was some sort of conversation in my head about what the top two games of the year for me are. There hadn't been. Now there is. So I don't know. I'm amped up. You can hear my voice. I yelled a lot. My voice hurts now.
And what was satisfying about this win was, like, the other wins I've been party to, I feel like I've been, like, I participated, I helped, but I was definitely carried by people who were a lot better than me. Like, you and I have both gotten chicken dinners with Matt Pasquale, who is
shout out to Pasquale.
He is an excellent shooter in that game. He's really fun to play with, because if you're, like, one of us, kind of schlups, like, just working your way through the game, he is just so good and so commanding that he can kind of carry over the finish line, even as you're helping. Will Smith was the same way. I was like, I mean, even though you can't drive worth shit, like, you're still...
He has a good sense of the map. He understands, like, where to go, and he's aggressive and assertive. He'll make a decision and do it, and that's been great. But we had to just do this ourselves, Patrick.
Yeah. Like, the arc, like, specifically, like, I've enjoyed so much of this game, but the, like, 80-hour or 70-hour arc that you and I have had, like, both on-stream and off-stream, culminating in this moment is, like, they're, like, when you, like, just, if I was to sit down and distill, rather than, like, my favorite games of all time, but just, like, personal, like, highlights, moments of an accomplishment, it is certainly, at least right now, in the top five. Like, I don't know where it would settle. I have to think about that a little longer, but it is one of the most satisfying things I've ever done in a video game, in an early access video game that's only getting better. Except for the fact that these crates are coming out, or are out. People can buy them. You got some sweet yellow track pants. I discovered that because I use Steam primarily to redeem codes I get for my job, that I haven't purchased anything in a while. And so I was like, hey, I'll go buy something. And I did. And the game said, thanks for buying something. Also, it's going to be 30 days where you can use the marketplace, which now means I'm going to have to use my Battlegrounds Battle Points, which is the in-game currency, in order to get a crate. And then, again, there are multiple crates that they're doing for Gamescom, but some of the best stuff, the coolest stuff, is in these crates where you have to pay at least $250
to open the crate. Real dollars.
$250
for
real treasury currency. And
$250,
I'm now going to have to get you to buy it and then send it to me, so that I can then use those keys to open the crates that I get, because for another month I cannot buy anything off the marketplace, and this is going to end in like a week or two.
This is starting to sound a little sketchy, to be honest. I don't know if I would take him up on that, Austin. Like, this is one of those deals where it's like, look, I just need you to front me. Like, this is a one-time offer. Like, this is only coming around once.
Just one key, man. Just one key. Just give me one key. Yeah,
I will get you back. I will get you back to the next sale. I promise. You, like, you and I go back. Crowbar and sickle, right?
Right. It's like, yo, the but scene I need, from the, I need... the Wire. It's the we don't got a dream no more. We got real shit. And then,
awesome.
That look.
I need those camo pants. They're going to look good on my butt.
God.
Oh.
This is the meeting across the river, actually.
Oh yeah.
Of Crowbar and Sickle, like.
God. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna send you one key after this call, Patrick. After we're done with this episode, I'm gonna send you a key, and you can open the crate. We can open it tomorrow on the stream.
Definitely. Oh, so I want those hot pants, or I want one of those pleated skirts.
The skirts look good.
I got options. I got options. Good.
It's a good skirt.
It's nice. They're purple
skirts. There's some good skirts.
I like a good purple skirt.
The hot pants, let me tell you.
Hot pants.
I cannot wait to see
those
hot pants.
Yo, if someone wants to... Can you buy and sell?
Can you just straight up buy hot pants? Maybe I can just send you some hot pants.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Can you buy individual clothing items on the marketplace?
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
How much are those hot pants going for?
I don't know. We should check.
Is it $250?
No,
everything's $250.
They're probably way more than that.
Oh.
No, I'm guessing they're like $15, $20. That would be like my...
Yeah, like the Steam Marketplace. You know this. You were an Idle Thumbs. The Steam Marketplace hats.
It's a place.
Hats cost money.
There's things.
You know?
Hats cost money. Pants. True fact about capitalism.
You know what? There's none on the marketplace yet. I don't think you're allowed to trade them yet. I think you can only trade them maybe once the event is over or something.
Patrick's very upset.
I'm sorry.
Getting those hot pants.
There's someone who has a buy order in for hot pants right now. Okay. So on Steam, when you want to buy something, you can either be like, there's one on the marketplace, I'll buy it. Or you can put in a request to buy it, at which point...
I want to do... Okay. I guess Patrick. I couldn't do that. I'd have to.
You can't buy it either. Don't worry, because the highest buy order right now is $236.
Oh.
So Someone is going to spend $230 on these hot pants.
That's a lot of money for hot pants.
They're good hot pants. They're good hot pants.
I don't want to wear pants in this game.
They're denim hot pants.
Those are hot pant jorts.
They're hot pant jorts.
That's a hot pant jort.
With a belt. With a
with a special belt.
Like OD green canvas belt.
Oh, OD green. I like that term. Yeah. That's good.
OD green. It's olive drab.
Oh, I thought you meant like OD. Like
the Garfield character?
Like OD. No.
Like an OD. Like an oatmeal OD.
Oh, God.
That's what I thought. I was like, okay.
How's everybody else doing today? How you all feeling?
Super.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You seem super.
I saw my favorite movie of the year yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The Dark Tower.
No. No. Nope. No.
What'd you say?
It was move over James Bond, eat a dick John Wick, because Charlize Theron is here and she dropped an atomic blonde on the world of action movies.
Did you prepare this whole statement you just did?
No. Hey, did you look in the mirror this morning and say, I got
this? These notes are about Uncharted 4. You can read it. Those are about Uncharted 4. I did not prepare that. That was a true statement from my mind.
Danielle has notes here about Uncharted 4 on the back of this Shantae half-genie hero press release.
Sometimes that's how you get ready for things. You take notes.
You just seemed like it was a rehearsed thing you just said.
No, that was...
That was a freestyle.
Wow, that was an accusation, my man. That was some Meek Mill on
I'm just saying. I didn't expect to have that shit off the dome like that.
Danielle's gonna have to be dunking on you now for the next month. Like,
I just trying to have like her phone out, like reading the freestyle on the notepad app.
I want you to know, I wasn't looking at anything here.
Turn on your computer.
I'll show you. All I had was the Wikipedia page for Atomic Blonde.
Which she's edited to include her script.
No, I have not.
It says it right here.
That is untrue. No, that's not. False.
That was, yeah. So what do you think of how you said favorite movie of the year
Honestly,
so far?
Favorite movie of the year so far.
Talk
which
to
is
us
saying
Atomic
a lot, because I liked Wonder Woman quite a bit. Yeah. And I, several movies I like quite a bit. Well, first of all, this is an action movie. A really good James Bond-esque or John Wick-esque action movie. Starring Charlize Theron. She also produced, which makes a lot of sense because she did all her own stunts and actually trained real martial arts, and it looks actually real, which you can tell if you watch single take long fight scenes that actually have a lot of impact and looked very real. And I was like, oh, that's how you do an armbar. Right. Yes, that is the right way to do that kick. I got very excited about that. But she plays, it's set in 1989 Berlin, very, very specifically. You wrote a piece on the site about how well the movie does place and space and like in a specific time right before the Berlin Wall came down, basically. Yeah. And the movie takes place around a couple of days of that happening. So there's already this energy, like this youthful energy in the city, this incredible sort of, I don't know, moment of activism and moment of excitement and moment of like something stirring.
Yeah, there's like a recurring theme through, not a theme, but like the main characters who are all these like, you know, they're all espionage agents, they're all
MI6 agents,
right? They're all like. You know, people who are working on both the east and the west side of the wall. They're all constantly like backstabbing each other or like are secretly aligned with a different group or
there's
secretly
like
aligned
double,
to themselves.
There's like double, triple, quadruple
totally.
Agent
it's,
kind of
exactly.
stuff going on.
And a lot
on.
Of this stuff is very like low-key and subtle. But throughout the whole thing, there is a lot of just like, wow, these people who live here are amazing.
Yes.
Like the emerging, you know, punk and new wave scene and hip hop scene in East Berlin, the kind of like young youth culture, subculture scenes in East Berlin who are like, you know, trying to find a way to live the most aggressive, like powerful life they can.
Real
under
life,
that regime.
Yeah.
And then just like the notion of like, oh, these people are trying to move to their best life. They're taking risks to get across the wall. And they just, that stuff is just like peppered in a way that I don't think is, I think it's done well. Like it's done in a way that feels like they weren't just using it as like spice. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, to me it felt like a John Wick movie, which I like. I don't really want John Wick to eat a dick. I want to make myself very clear here. I like the John Wick movies.
Your AO3 account
it
says.
Just,
that's not,
you know, I
John Wick might fanfic. John Wick might make maybe. Someone else eat a dick to be
right.
Clear.
That's fair. You know, that's fair. But this felt like a John Wick movie with a lot of substance.
Right.
Whereas those movies are extremely fun. They're extremely
very
stylish.
And you should note one of the directors of the John Wick movies.
Oh yes,
directed this.
Let's see. I got it right here in this
Leech,
Wikipedia page.
Leith.
Yes, Leech or Leeked.
I don't know how to pronounce
Leech. You got it right. The spelling is correct.
Okay.
It just had so much style and Leech. Substance. And yes, of course, part of the reason I like it so much, of course, there's like a really awesome queer subplot in it, which is great and exciting. And also, it's really lovely to see Charlize Theron become like basically a really fantastic action star. Like she already kind of had those chops. We could see that in Mad Max.
Totally.
Which was fantastic and great. But this is her playing
sort of a femme fatale who is like a better Bond than Bond in a lot of ways, but actually has some feelings for people and actually cares about people in certain ways, but also is that kind of hyper competent, incredible hand-to-hand combat, speaks every language, is amazing, can do all the very subtle espionage as well.
Fucking amazing fight scene at the center the final act of that movie is like so good. There's just like this incredible long take, like single take. I'm sure it was a virtual single take. I'm sure there were like cuts in there.
I'm sure there's some fairly invisible cuts, upon watching it, it looks and feels like a single take, and it looks and feels like a real fight. There's a way that people who are even incredibly proficient fighters get exhausted in it, which is both funny and also like, that actually gives that a lot of weight that does not exist in a lot of other action
movies. It's her fighting these goons through this apartment building that looks like it belongs in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's just like, there's just shit, like a tarp on the floor, old dolls. Like, it's just like
a shitty
apartment. Yeah, exactly. And the fight just like rolls its way through the entirety from the top floor down, or like up the floors, then back down and the floors. And it's just an incredible, like, it's a mix of like gunplay and mixed martial arts in a way that is, like you said, like, I love how tired everybody gets.
Yes.
There's definitely like, it feels similar to what people thought about Die Hard. In the 80s when it was like, oh, wow, this is a movie where the action hero actually gets beaten up. Like, she fucking takes
her knocks.
You see blood.
You see, you know, bruises. Cool. You see nasty stuff starting to happen.
Totally.
So, yeah.
I really enjoyed that, too. And I think that Berlin as a city was really interesting there. Like, I recognize that there is definitely liberty taken in order to kind of make it the cartoon version of Berlin at the end of the Cold War that they wanted it to be. But also, that's still an evocative space. I think the color in that movie was incredible.
Oh, it's incredible.
The nighttime is always, like, beautifully lit by neon. But not like bubblegum neon, like the kind of like neo-noir neon.
Absolutely.
Very good. I really liked it a lot. Anybody else up to anything? Rob, you've been playing anything?
Yeah, I've been playing a few things. I guess the thing that's been sort of consuming my days of late is Battle Brothers.
Oh, really? I hear that's good.
It is good. But I'm also having like kind of a mild milkshake duck situation with a little
Uh-oh.
Bit.
Uh-oh.
So Battle Brothers, like, and the funny thing is, it was like one of those things where I was sort of able to hand wave away some stuff when we talked about it on upcoming 3MA. And then but like something started to nag at me. I started really like paying closer attention.
Uh-huh.
And the more attention I paid, the more concerned I got.
So just briefly, Battle Brothers is like a tactical RPG where you run a mercenary band or something?
Yeah, like it's very much like the good parts of Berserk in some ways, if you know that anime. It's like, it's like, it's a lot about, it's a really bloody universe. Like your soldiers are going to get killed a lot unless you're going to aggressively save and reload your way through this game. It takes place in sort of a Mountain Blade overworld.
Okay.
And then for the tactical battles, it's a hex grid war game tactical RPG.
Okay.
And it's
sounds good so far.
It is really
everybody
good.
Loves Battle Brothers, the turn-based tactical RPG where you run a medieval mercenary campaign 5 minutes later.
The whole internet loves it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it is like, when we say something is problematic, I think this game is kind of like, kind of typifies that.
Hmm.
So it's also trying for a very grimdark, low fantasy style. Like, it's a little bit like medieval Germany, but with vampires and undead
so there's like
various
fantasy
apocalypses.
Okay.
Yeah, but you will never, like, you're not magical fantasy people in this universe. Like, you are just, like, workaday, like, mercenary stiffs in a world that's, like, getting overrun.
There's
with,
no
like,
Gandalfs, there's just, like, Henriks.
Yeah, if there is a Gandalf, you're not going to be working with him.
Gotcha.
Like, you might see Gandalf go riding by, but, like, you will never be, like, you'll be the sort of guy who just, like, gets snuffed in the background of a shot of one battle. So the thing is, though, all your characters are basically, the character art is going to be divisive. Like, your characters are kind of like these little busts, these little figurines on the battlefield. And they're really impossible to tell apart. Like, mostly you can tell them apart because of their armor and weapons that they're carrying, which does a good job of surfacing that information, which is important. But the other thing is, they're all like, they all have identical faces. Like, they're all like the same white dude.
Yeah.
Just with like different haircuts, different colored hair, but like, There are no there's no minorities in this game. There's no women in the Battle Brothers company, which
no battle obviously sisters.
No battle sisters at all. Even Warhammer 40K knew to bring in those sisters at some point. Right? It was regular Warhammer. No, they both had sisters.
It's kind of just ignoring a lot of these experiences, which the game is focused on tactical combat. Like, I get why this is happening. But at the same time, then you start, like, paying attention to what the game does say. And I was, like, starting to get a little bit concerned, but I was still really into it. And then I noticed...
I'm worried.
So, all your character types have, like, backgrounds.
Sure.
And so, like, an apprentice is, like... Apprentices are good students, but they don't really know much yet. They get a plus 10% to battle experience, blah, blah, blah. Woodsmen are good at swinging axes, and they tend to be brawnier. And so, that sort of tells you what their natural aptitudes are.
Sure. I'm worried.
Uh-oh.
Refugees was one of the backgrounds.
Uh-huh.
And there was just this line for the refugee background. Refugees lack the conviction to fight for their homes,
oh, God.
But are used to God. Long journeys and exhausting effort by this point. And I was like, huh. Like, a game made in the last few years, like, making sort of a blanket statement about the values of refugees and who becomes refugees is not, like, a neutral thing. There's another character background, cripples, which the game is basically like, you know, they're kind of enfeebled, not much good for anything, but you know, you can recruit them if you want.
Good.
Oh, wow.
Good.
And
game.
I think what the game is doing, the entire game has this really cynical, dark tone where it's actually the game's perspective is of asshole mercenaries. Like,
right.
The few places where your character interacts with, like, normal people, you are aggressively not giving a shit about them or the people you're helping. The only people who matter is your company of Battle Brothers. And
that's... But how is that framed is what my question ends up being, right? Because, like, I think that there are games that have done you are a group of shitty people that can frame it in a way that is, at the very least, like, meaningful. That doesn't just make it feel like the fantasy is that you get to be a shithead, you know?
Yeah, and I don't, like, it's not saying anything about it, but it's also not being, like, laudatory about it. So it's like, it's not taking a position, but at that point, and this is why I say it's, like, a good illustration of, like, what it means to be problematic. Mm-hmm. It's not that, like, the game, I think, is going aggressively out of its way to be shitty. It does have a point of view that it kind of acknowledges is, like, kind of mean-spirited and inhumane. But at the same time, what it chooses to include in that world doesn't include anything that really challenge that worldview. Mm-hmm. It does, and at that point, you're like, it's not really showing awareness. Isn't it therefore kind of tacitly endorsing a lot of shittiness? So I mean that's the place I'm at with it. And the other thing I want to say, it got me thinking a little bit just about hero narratives and how heroism has how stories about heroes and badasses like kicking ass maybe create like an intellectual expectation that like of course this is what people would do. Like this is what a good person should do when confronted with something. And it's why you end up making shitty statements about people who have to flee their homes when it's overrun by warlords. It got me thinking about The Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
And
the original or the recent remake?
Either works, but I'm talking about the original, Yul Brynner and all that. The really good one.
Yeah.
And The Magnificent Seven is about a besieged town of farmers in Mexico or the southwestern United States who are being terrorized by a bandit, and they pool their resources and they hire a badass group of gunslingers to come and save their asses. And a big tension in the movie is that the farmers aren't brave warriors. That's why they need these people, is they're peaceable people and they're not psychologically ready and they're not physically ready. They don't have the training to take part in a battle like this. They are being confronted with something that normal people i.e. the sort of people who like are the audience for stories like
you
this,
and me, right, yeah, exactly,
yeah, are not prepared to equip. Right. And there's a character in the movie who kind of judges them really harshly for it. Someone who thinks like farmers, like it turns out, you know, he's the hot-headed kid who thinks, you know, farmers are weak, you know, strong people would pick up the gun and protect themselves, defend their own. And the other gunslingers are basically like, eh, that's bullshit. Like, like we live a violent and horrible life because that's all we're fit for. But like, that doesn't mean we're better people. And that's kind of the adoption. And the
is the thought that you then have that like that second step doesn't happen in games, that like we don't ever get the vision from the people who say, when you have to make a game in which you are playing as heroes, you are valorizing that. Because that's what the player does, and the player has to be valorized so that they keep playing the game and they feel good. And so there's never room for like the civilians to be like, no, our version of life is also totally acceptable. And that's what leads to framing refugees as shitty. If it's not bringing in some exterior baggage about the world.
Yeah, and I think like there's, I think the thing in The Magnificent Seven is it actually captures the flip side of like, if you have that mindset that like people who can't protect themselves and can't like, you know, be violent to protect their homes and their own. If you sort of adopt that mindset that people like that are weak and shitty and don't deserve anything, then that is explicitly the villain of that movie. One of the last things the villain of the movie says is almost kind of a, hey man, why you gotta do me like this? He asks the Magnificent Seven basically, he's like, if God did not want them sheared, he would not have made them sheep. And like, and then you got to put that guy down. But I think in a lot a lot of hero narratives, you end up kind of adopting that mindset well, I would, of course, never let this happen to me and mine because I know exactly how I would be in this situation. Yeah. And if you do get sheared, then obviously you're sheep and you kind of had it coming. And I think that's where Battle Brothers kind of unwittingly or tacitly ends up stumbling.
Right.
And it's made a great game, and it is a really good game. Like, I highly recommend, like I think it is up your alley, but at the same time, I gotta admit, like, once I saw this stuff, I enjoyed it a little bit less and started, like, it's like when you're hanging out with a friend who you never know, like, when something really inappropriate's gonna come out of their mouth.
Oh,
and there's that, like, should I even be here? Like, is this really sustainable?
Yeah.
That's kind of me playing Battle Brothers right now.
Right. I think we're gonna continue this conversation in a second, but I want to briefly, I just want to shout out the game that I played and actually got a victory in, which was The Shrouded Isle I played. Disclosure, art is by Eric Alahi, who's done art for us, and Tanya X Short, who's written for us a couple of times, worked on it with Kit Fox Games. They made Moon Hunters last year. The Shrouded Isle is like a really interesting, Rob, you should play The Shrouded Isle.
Ooh.
It is a Do you want the mechanics pitch or do you want the setting pitch? Do you want
give me the setting.
All right.
For mechanics.
I mean, I'll just read, like, it's a very good lore sell on the Steam page just in their little mini thing. Your Excellency, you must prepare for the awakening of our Lord. He hungers for a human sacrifice every season.
Oh.
Sinners try to hide their dark secrets, but all must be purged. You play a sort of cult who lives off on the shores of this, in my mind, European or maybe, you know, North Atlantic seaside, who worships the dark god Chernabog, who is supposed to be resurrected after 500 years of darkness. It is year 497. You have 3 years left, and you have to just keep your fucking town on track. And the way you do
on
that...
On track for what?
To make sure that they don't become sinners, that they don't lose focus. We're so close to the resurrection of our Dark Lord. And you have to, the way you do that is every season you have to elect five people, one from each of the noble families in town, to be your advisors. And each one is in charge of something. So, like, one of the Kagani family is in charge of keeping people ignorant. The Yosefka family is in charge of building monuments and raising fervor for the Dark Lord. And you have to balance a bunch of stuff. Like, first of all, you have to balance the loyalties because – the thing that happens is at the end of every season, you have to kill one of your advisors, which means that like the Yosefka family is not going to be pleased if you killed one of their advisors, especially if they didn't do anything wrong. But here's the secret. Everybody did something wrong. Ooh. It's just a matter of knowing how bad the thing was. And so you can kind of, it's kind of a resource management game with a really beautiful coat of paint in which what you're doing is trying to identify people, what they're good at. So like maybe you'll find somebody who is like, they are not just, not only do they do stuff with obedience, but they have the lawful trait, which means like when they're trying to enforce the laws, like they really enforce the laws. But maybe they also have the artist trait, which means that they are not into ignorance so much. And that is a major sin. And when you sacrifice them, it's not such a big deal because everybody knows artists are outlawed. It's like a very fucking grimdark game also. That is the thing that I like about it is that it is the opposite side of what most cosmic horror, Lovecraftian horror does. Like most Lovecraftian horror does the thing that's like, there are things in this world too dark and too strange for us. What are the limits of human rationality? What are the things that and also because Lovecraft is terrible, often it's just the answer is black people. Not often, a couple of times. The answer of what is dark and terrible in this world is black people. But what actually resonated with me with Lovecraftian horror always has been the limits of human reason, that there are things that do not add up, that there are things that the world does not make sense. There are horrors too great for our minds. The thing that I like about this is it kind of flips it and says, like, in there are things that we believe to be so good that we cannot understand them, and we'll do anything to get them, even if that means slowly purging an entire village. Like, I got my win, and one of these families was down to two people. It started with seven, and, like, bit by bit, like, I guess y'all had a bunch of sinners. Sorry. And there are seasons when it's like, you know, all you were you were just curious. You were a curious person, but that's enough for me to kill you right now because I don't want to upset the Caldwell family because then they'll rebel. It's like a very – it's gorgeous also. It's a very striking, like, monochrome, two-color thing.
It's like neon yellow and navy blue.
Yeah. Or there's really other cool – there are actually looking. Other themes that you can set up. There's like a darker – there's like a deep navy blue and a slightly lighter blue, and then there's like a maroon, like a blood wine – one. That's
really the default aesthetic looks like a Game Boy game.
It does. Yes, it totally does. Yeah. But like,
I mean, with like super high res art, but like the palette is reminds me of an original Game Boy.
And the thing that ends up being good about it really is just it was one of those games we talked about getting better in Battlegrounds, but like I felt myself getting better every single run, and the runs are pretty quick. You can play a full game of it. You can lose a full game of it in 5 to 10 minutes. A win is only 40 minutes or so. And so, like, I played for 5 minutes and lost and didn't understand what the fuck was going on. And then 5 games later, I was playing for 20 minutes. And I'd finish a round and be like, all right, I'm making progress. I can do it. I can get back in. And over the course of 2 days, you know, I spent 3 or 4 hours and then finally got, like, the good, true win. The true ending.
The true win.
The true terrible win, which is, as you might imagine, a Dark Lord.
Real pleased. Bad.
Oh, the Dark Lord was very pleased. The Dark Lord was very pleased, and the art was fantastic when the Dark Lord arrived. So that's what I've been doing over the weekend. Also, more Heat Signature, which I want to stream at some point this week because it's so fucking good. All right, I think that's all we've played.
Well, I played Uncharted 4, but we can talk about that.
We can talk about it next time.
We got territory to cover.
Yeah, and I'll be able to on Friday talk about. You guys must have talked about Tacoma on Friday, right?
I didn't get a chance to play it, so no.
Same.
All right. Tacoma, and then later this week I'll be able to talk about the new Ninja Theory game, Hellblade.
Oh, awesome.
Senua's
awesome.
Sacrifice, which I'm
Going to try to play through Tacoma by Friday then, because it's like what?
You definitely can. It's
between 2 to 5 hours.
You're looking at like 3 to 5 hours.
Max. All right, cool. I'll set off some time and try to get through it maybe. So, there was a wild weekend.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
I guess my question, all right, so how do we even go into this?
Well, I guess we should start with, like...
The statement. Right? Yeah. So, basically, the factual statement here is that Chris Grant, who is the EIC over on at Polygon, shout-outs to Chris Grant, says, I've heard the allegations regarding Nick Robinson, and I'm taking them seriously. Nick has been suspended pending a thorough Vox Media inquiry. And for, I think, a lot of people, that came as a big surprise. I think maybe a lot of people maybe listening to us actually don't even know what any of that means, right?
Or even who Nick Robinson is.
Let's start from the beginning.
Right, Right. So Nick Robinson is a producer, a video producer over at Polygon. He'd previously been at Revision 3. He'd done his own YouTube stuff before that. And he'd been – actually, I guess he was a Giant Bomb intern years ago.
He was an intern with Ben at the same time that Matt Kessler, right. who's Matt now Kessler. At Sony, and Ben Pack, who now right. now works for
now
Giant
Bomb.
Now
is at Giant Bomb. Yeah.
They were a trio of interns when – right after I started, I believe. So a number
oh,
of
sorry.
Years
did
ago.
You did you so read you, there you when they were there?
Yes. Yeah. I worked alongside Nick and Ben and and Matt for a little while there.
So that statement came out. I guess now what people might know him for is videos that he does at Polygon.
Carboys.
Carboys was a really big one.
A lot of stuff with Griffin. Like
a lot of stuff with Griffin. Cool Games Inc.
Yeah.
Podcast that I've been on. Like their stuff like that. So those allegations bubbled up after it was a very strange. Sequence here, very like hard to follow sequence. I think from the outside, I saw a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
Lots of people got in touch with me. I'm sure they got in touch with you and said like, "What is going on?"
Mm-hmm.
Last week, it came to light that this is the strangest arc.
Yeah.
It came to light that the Switch port of the game Overcooked was not up to snuff.
Or a lot of frame rate issues.
A lot of frame rate issues, and the publisher. Nick filed a bug report, I guess, and the publisher reached out and said, had a template letter, had a form letter that basically said, you know, thanks for getting in touch. Could you provide video of how it's breaking so that we know what to do? And that, over the course of a day, like, sparked...
So he screen capped that and
right.
put it on
yes.
Twitter.
Sorry. Yes.
So,
go ahead.
No, it's all right. So it was publicly seen that he was kind of saying, like, oh, here's what, you know, like, I have time to... I'm paraphrasing, but
totally.
It was sort of throwing a little shade at the publisher
Definitely.
Saying, like, I'm not going to take video for you in QA testing.
Right, I'm not
going to
do your job, right. basically.
Yeah, and like in further context, like, a lot of Nick's Twitter is, like, extremely sarcastic and with a bit of a mean edge to it, which is a little contrasted to, I would say, like, his more video personality, the stuff you see with Griffin, which is, like, very, you know...
Personable
and fun and...
goofy.
And goofy and weird in a fun, inclusive way. And, like, there was specifically a response where someone said, like, it was maybe have been a developer, I'm not sure, but that said, like, hey, man, like, they're just trying to fix
their game.
Somebody
named Landon, I can tell you that.
You have a right to be upset. And I think, like, his response was more or less, I'm paraphrasing, but, like, fuck you.
I was get fucked, Landon.
Get fucked, Landon.
Yes,
yeah,
get
that
fucked,
was
Landon.
The...
And to be fair, like, lots of people were, like, going hard at Nick over it. And then other people in the development community were like, hey, like, it actually, this is a pretty common thing. Like, we're a small team.
How else are they supposed to know how the game is broken?
Yeah. So, but that conversation very quickly spiraled off when people who were dunking on Nick for this, for throwing the shade, alluded to inappropriate behavior. The word nudes was thrown around, which if you're not up on our lingo, if you're like a 38-year-old dad and like what is sliding into DMs, what are nudes?
Right.
They're nude pictures.
There's a lot of like millennial talk.
There is a lot
going
of millennial
on
talk,
here. So straight talk with millennials.
And there were lots
of
like broad allegations that were not they're not very many specific allegations.
At first.
Well, I think even now, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, so as someone who's, like, completely on the outside of this, and, like, my primary engagement with video games outside of, like, reading stuff is podcasts, so this is not, like, territory that's familiar to me. I don't really know Griffin and Nick's, like, video work that much. But it was striking that, like, people started, like, alluding to stuff that was out there, and it was in this very, like, knowing... It's very familiar from the way, just the way people talk on Twitter, any group of, like, wide, like, social acquaintance... It was this very knowing, like, referring to things that were, like, common knowledge, but, like, nobody ever talked about publicly. And so there's kind of this, like, what? Wait, like, is there a huge thing that everyone is in on that I've never heard of? And that's kind of how it seemed.
Right. I think that the answer there is yes and no, right? The answer is obviously not everybody, right? Like, you didn't know about it. Lots of people were very surprised that any sort of allegations like this were there.
You should probably clarify a little bit about the nature of the allegations.
Well,
in terms
thing
of,
is,
of like basically alluding towards sexual harassment.
Sexual harassment is definitely what I think is the broad, the kind of broad category under which the allegations were gesturing towards.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is like at the time that Chris Grant came out and made that
still
statement,
some people didn't know what it was referring
no
to.
No one person had said Nick Robinson is a serial sexual harasser. Like, no one had said that phrase, right? And so there was lots of confusion around it. And partially that's because for a lot of people, and I admit myself included, like, there was a degree to which some of this was known previously. You know, we actually, Patrick, I know you'd been working on a story around this all weekend, basically, that we are kind of putting on freeze for now. I talked to Senior Vice Editorial about this. It's a story that we want to cover, but we were pretty much instructed, like, wait until the Vox investigation comes to a close. Like, that's what you can report on here. There are conflicts of interest at play around relationships with people involved in the wider story. It's frustrating because I look on the website, I look on Google right now. If I search Nick Robinson scandal, Nick Robinson sexual harassment, what's going to come up is a Reddit thread.
There's a Taco and Action thread. There's a NeoGAF thread. There are like threads on Twitter that have
that NeoGAF thread ended up being kind of okay. Surprisingly,
if you actually want to, the original post in that NeoGAF thread, which is now locked because it's spiraled off into people talking about why people voted for Trump.
of course.
Has some of that, and specifically that post, which was, you know, a little of what I had hoped to do, was to try and give people context for sort of like what is happening so they can wrap their head around it. And it also very specifically does not include sort of like locked accounts and screenshots of certain people that had begun to share things. They were getting shared wider in a way that they did not feel comfortable with, because there's been an obsession as this is broken with that I think is natural for people to feel, which is, they've been called receipts, which is a reference to a meme that you can go look up on your own. But essentially people are looking for sort of definitive proof of what happened, as opposed to shade, allegations, vague comments.
The point that you make that about locked accounts openly saying stuff is actually a really interesting one for covering something like this and for our current moment in which there are people who have locked accounts but still have lots of followers on those locked accounts.
Which we should probably even say, like, if you're not, like, super into Twitter, a locked account means it's not public and you actually choose who can see it. So maybe it's for 10 friends or 15 friends.
Right. And, like, or 100 friends or 200 friends.
Whatever number you want, you have to approve basically who can see it. So that's just to know, it's basically like a type of, think of it as a type of, like, group chat or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that gets tricky too, is, like, you know, as journalists, we have access to information that we know we could report on. I can report on this Chris Grant statement. It's made on his public Twitter, right? I can report on, if someone gives us a statement on the record, we can report on that statement. There are stuff in private Twitters that, you know, I don't even know that I would want to report on it, but, like, oh, this is a thing. And it's like, oh, a lot of people saw this accusation that is more clear than what was out on public Twitter. And so stuff like that is what can lead someone like Chris Grant and Polygon to make decisions regarding things like taking steps of suspension and further investigation.
There's a whole mess involved there, especially when it comes to legal action versus what may be an extra legal detail, basically.
That has been another sticking point, I think, for this conversation with a lot of people who are saying, like, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. He deserves, the innocent until proven guilty. And, like, one of the things that I see a lot of people coming back to is that debate right there. And it's like, well, the court of public opinion is not the court of law. No one is locking Nick Robinson up. But you're allowed to have feelings about a person separate from what you would do to them legally.
Right.
And that is a complex thing, because we do hold
it is
that,
pretty complex.
That
yeah.
notion of being innocent until proven guilty very firmly, or at least some of us do. But I think there's a key difference between those two things.
Well, and you have if you look through, like, one of the things I was doing this weekend was sort of name searching for him to kind of get a sense of where his his fans were, because, I mean, if you look at Nick's follower count, it, you know, is dwarfed by a lot of other people, but similar to the McElroys, like, Nick's had a lot of very dedicated fans. Like, one good way to, like, to judge, like, sort of like a fandom is, on any random tweet, just see how many faves they get. And, like, most of Nick's tweets get, like, thousands of them for even the most innocuous sort of statements. And so I was curious how those fans were reacting. And so there are like sort of, let's call them shitlords, who just want to die on the hill of innocent until proven guilty, which is not as black and white or as clear as you want to make that sound. And then there's the more complicated, which I think actually might come up in a question that you had, Austin had talked about, that someone might have submitted. But like, what does a fan do when their natural tendency is, I don't want to believe this person did the thing that they are being accused of, and so my feelings are, I hope they are innocent, because I want to continue enjoying the things they may make in the future, because if it turns out to be true or is a shade of true or whatever, you know, direction it goes in, you know, can I continue to enjoy that? You know, like a lot of people went through that with Bill Cosby. I'm not comparing those scenarios. I'm just saying a public figure in which what happens to the art of the artist when their personal life becomes extremely complicated and messy. And I think I understand the hesitation of a lot of fans that go, because I actually saw a lot of very reasoned fans that were like, I hope he's innocent, but if he's not, that makes my relationship really complicated. I don't know if I can enjoy that content anymore. But I understand their initial hesitation to just be like, because anything that you love, when it gets fractured in this way, like that sucks. Like that's
I don't know that I can watch a Woody Allen movie again.
Right.
Like there's a point at which I got old enough and clued in enough to be like, ah, fuck, no, I can't. Like I grew up loving Woody Allen films, and like, and that's a decision you have to make for yourself. We've had that conversation before. I've brought out my favorite John Darnielle quote about like we've done that route of like, what about shitty creators? I think it's been extra interesting to me to watch because so much of that fandom is progressive, is very forward thinking, is very willing to listen to victims who come forward with their stories, and it's been frankly a relief to see that a lot of those fans have said like, you know what, like this is shitty, I'm frustrated that this has happened, and not close ranks and said, not our boy.
Right.
Which partially I think also comes from things that like Griffin made a statement about being very frustrated and upset about Nick, basically.
And Matt Kessler and Ben Pack made statements that were not, again, sort of specific, here's what happened or here's why I'm upset. Right. But there are the people who are, you know, some of the people closest to him were very public about their discomfort.
Right. And I think for me, one of the larger things that this gets to is it's a reminder about what we think safety looks like.
Yeah.
And about kind of what a relationship I think with content creators is in 2017, right? Mm-hmm. Like this to me, the thing that this reminded me of were a number of YouTuber scandals over the last few years. I'm thinking about people like Alex Day and other YouTubers who draw people in largely because they are really warm and
they seem like the boy next door.
They seem like the boy next door. They're going to read Harry Potter with you. They're going to make jokes about your favorite underground anime and do it in a way that is not aggressive and that is not about convincing you that you are, you know, an object of desire for them. And once that kind of opens things up, then there can be really aggressive behavior, there can be manipulative behavior, there can be sexual harassment. And like that stuff is one of those things that we need to get good at looking for and recognizing the signs of. It's a weird thing to have, like I said earlier, like it's not a thing we're writing about right now, partially because there is a degree of conflict of interest. There's a degree of as Rob mentioned, like it seemed like certain people knew some things. Like I can say openly, I've known some shit about Nick Robinson for a while now. I've had like knowledge of like, oh, hey, he's done some creepy shit. But the people who I've spoken to who've been involved in that have not wanted me or other people to be public about that information for lots of complicated reasons, which you have to honor that request when that happens. But it opened up a sort of vision for me of looking at not just Nick's behavior, but other similar sorts of behavior in the world, the wider world beyond games, happening in comics, happening again in YouTube, happening in fan comics, happening in you know, all sorts of different kind of creative spheres of like, oh, what is the power relationship between a creator and their fans? What is the power relationship between a creator, you know, at a publication or at a, you know, in a media outlet versus freelancers, you know, versus other people who are just kind of like trying to get by? And that stuff is a mess. And like it's clued me into that sort of manipulative and really just gross behavior in which the power dynamic is used to benefit somebody and to silence other people.
Well, and it's also... Oh, go ahead, Daniel.
I was just going to say, it's very complicated and also illustrated to me something about the nature of celebrity and the nature of, you know, the whole cult of personality that is what game journalism is now in a lot of ways. Right. It's doing podcasts, it's putting yourself out there, it's having a Twitter presence, it's all of these things which are now equated, and especially in this sort of very grim way potentially, to celebrity and things that celebrities have done and powerful, you know, like powerful men have done to women
for a long time.
Forever and ever. Right, there's nothing new whatsoever about it. But the fact that, oh, the cult of personality in journalism feels like a new thing, and it's like, oh, all these old problems are of course going to come up and of course going to be unfortunately
and
shittily.
How do we deal with it
in a good way, in a positive way?
Right. I'll read one of these questions, which I think can help us pivot to another question, a sub-question inside of what you just said, which is Anonymous writes in, recently there's been a minor scandal in the games journalism community regarding sexual harassment. What sort of steps can the community take to prevent this? Is there a reason why this behavior is allowed to continue for so long? I was forced to drop out of a study abroad program because of sexual harassment, and I've always harbored a bit of animosity towards friends of the harassers. It was also widely known that he was a creep. He, in this case, being this person's harasser. I know that it's tough to call out friends, and I don't want to accuse or assume anything about anyone, but isn't there a bit of scrutiny due to those who spent 40 hours a week with someone? From Anonymous. And I guess the first thing I want to say is part of what sexual harassers do is hide themselves in plain sight.
Yeah.
Build alibis. Make it seem impossible for that to be the thing.
Work in gray areas in which there can be two sides.
And I mean, so in the time since this started happening, other stuff has come out. People have come out and said, shown quote unquote receipts, shown their DMs with Nick, in which it is him suddenly becoming very sexually aggressive after that not being an element in their conversation. I can't vouch for the validity or the veracity of those DMs. Like I haven't seen all of those things, but that is what is shown there. And part of what is important about recognizing there is, in this current version of this thing that's happened for a long time, of men manipulating celebrity, of people manipulating celebrity to assault and harass other people, in this one case, the thing to think about is, in our space, there is this line of social progressivity, kind of sexual progressivity, the notion of sex positivity, which I think is fundamentally good, can also be used by people to prey on and pressure people.
It's a performative wokeness.
Ways. Yeah, it is.
Performative wokeness is exactly it.
And the second that turns from being performative to being once the clip comes off, it's the fucking worst. And it's the worst because it hurts people. Well, first and foremost, the highest, most important thing is it hurts people. And the second thing is that it does damage to the notion that we should live in a world of sexual positivity, that we should live in a world of progressive politics. And it's just like this terrible double gut
punch.
Poly
relationships can be healthy and normal and sane.
Right.
And a good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And it's one of those things that, like, I think all of us have, as you know, that actively sort of participate in the cult of personality, to be particularly blunt about it, because that's just the nature of how we sustain our careers in 2017. Mm-hmm. One of the things you learn or try to learn or be responsible about as your sort of like your influence grows is like the power that you do wield. Like you wield an enormous amount of power in all sorts of ways. Like a basic thing that I've learned over the years on Twitter is like, you know, it feels very easy to target your followers at people over something, right? Like, and I've made mistakes in the past over stuff like that I've had to learn from, because I have to realize, like, you can't do things like that. And that power and that power dynamic and that power and that influence is part of becoming one of those people and realizing those social and power dynamics. And that's what scares me about, like, this. There used to be a much clearer line between sort of – like the power dynamic was very clear, right? Like even if it was violated, it at least was visible in a way that doesn't feel visible in the age of social media, in which it is now cool to pretend that power dynamic doesn't exist, that we are all the same, that we are all
on
the same
level. Oh, you could just reach out. Listen, my DMs are open. You can reach out and message me about some stuff. Oh, you didn't like this article? Let me know. Oh, you saw a typo? Let me know. Oh, you're in town? Let me know.
And I do all of those things because a lot of those things are useful to me. But what is especially when you start talking about like age gaps and like communities on Tumblr and Instagram that are not old enough to understand power dynamics. That's how predatory like practices work. Like that's how predatory, that's how being a predator works, is taking advantage of the fact that people are not aware of power dynamics. And we live in an age now where it is easier to do that than ever. It is easier to make that invisible more than ever. And that's terrifying. That is incumbent on the person with the power dynamic to realize they have the power, because and the people below them may not necessarily be aware that they are being taken advantage of.
It could be very hard also for the people around that person to know that they are taking advantage of other people.
Right.
Because they're not doing it like at work. They're not doing it in their same social groups. Like the problem with celebrity is that it opens up this whole new pool of people who can be targeted, because they like the content that you make. They like the videos that you make. And they are not ever going to come into the office. They are never going to be seen by the people who maybe have like a weird gut vibe about a person, you know? Like, no, like they're never going to see something that they can then act on. And who knows? Like, I don't know what happened inside, behind Polygon's closed doors. I don't know if somebody had ever said, hey, like, be careful, you know, or hey, HR, be aware. Because there are limits to what that sort of what can be done before for more formal allegations do come forward. And it's just like, it's so frustrating, because you want it to be as simple as, I've heard bad things about this dude. I know bad things about this dude from people I trust. Let me push that forward and then action will be taken. And it's just like, at every level, there is stuff that pressures that from happening.
Yeah, I can say from a completely, utterly divorced from this experience, a sexual harassment experience I had at work that was incredibly clean cut. Like, I was groped at work by a coworker once, even before I was full-time in games.
Sure.
And it was even as clear cut as it was, workers were present, saw what happened. Mm-hmm. I still felt really bad and never wanted to be like in the hallway with that person until they were fired, right, in my case. And like, it was horrifying. And I even felt bad. I was like, oh, this person's going to get fired because of me. There's a whole complex emotions, and it's incredibly common. And it's one of those things where it's like, it is good to talk about these things and have these things in the open and think about ways to move forward and protect people and encourage.
Right.
Whatever we can in a positive way, because I understand from a very personal experience, it's hard to talk about this shit and not feel like, oh, and now I made it weird and now I've like created this weird dynamic in a group.
And towards Anonymous's question about like what steps do we take, I am thrilled that Polygon is taking this seriously, is holding an investigation, made the choice to suspend Nick until that investigation is over, and who knows what happens from there. But like, that is already a huge step and hopefully sets precedent for if this happens again.
Yeah.
And frustratingly, when this happens again, because people will remain to predators, they will keep taking advantage of power dynamics. And the hope is that bit by bit, it becomes more and more clear that it's not welcome here, that publications don't want to work with people who do that, and that there is just no place for it. We'll see. But that, for me, is one big step. And on the community side, being, you know, supportive of that process, being open with the fact that, like, maybe your fave is more than just a little problematic, it can be tough to do that. But, like, that is part of how we push towards the best possible outcome here, is not to try to protect, you know, the person whose stuff that you love. You know, if I ever, like, hit somebody with a car and drive off into the night, like, or whatever, fucking, if they arrest me, I need y'all to know I deserve to go to jail if I hit somebody with a fucking car or whatever.
And drove away.
Away, right? Like
not in Battlegrounds, it's fine, right?
In Battlegrounds.
Well, it's going to make...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Those streams weird.
Yeah. Oh, no!
It's true! sure is. Our echoes to Andrew's there question. He wrote in and said, I was deeply engaged with a gaming community that's been torn apart because of one of its creators was recently outed as a reprehensible human being. That's Andrew's words. Only a few days ago, I was a huge fan who interacted with the community Twitter and subreddits as part of my daily routine, and now I feel sick at the sight of any of this person's content. So, in the aftermath of all of this, how do I handle the love I had for content that I that came from what I thought was a good or at the very least decent place? Do I delete all of the fan videos and art I poured my soul into and felt giddy pride in when the person retweeted? Is there a way to distance the author from the work when their work involves their voice and personality? A way to leverage the shame I now feel for ever being a fan? Where does the community this person left behind go from here?
I mean, don't feel bad for liking the content before. Yeah. You can't shame yourself for not having information you had no access to. Like that right. That is not incumbent on this you, is the not fan, to put that burden on yourself. Like
this was like an inside baseball type situation where like. Real talk, like, I don't know what people at Polygon knew about Nick. Like, I don't know how spread those rumors, or not even rumors, how spread that talk was. I know that Rob is, like, was shocked by a lot of this, even though I think Danielle, you and I were like,
Some
of this was coming. And so you should really understand that if you were just a fan, I don't think that there's anything here to hold yourself like up against the wall too. Like you didn't fuck up because you liked Carboys.
Right.
You couldn't have known that, right?
Moving forward is the hard part.
Moving forward is the hard
part.
That's
the really hard part to sort of parse.
Yeah. I guess the thing for me is the thing that I would say is that stuff that you did then, you should still be proud of it on its merits. If you did rad fan art, if you made fan videos, if you did animations for Cool Games Inc.,
hopefully you learned skills and did something good came out of that.
As bridges towards stuff that you're going to make in the future, right? Like, you worked your creative muscles in a way that is valuable in and of itself. The fan communities for those shows did really incredible, fun things that, like, interacted with the creators in ways that were really rad at the time. And I think what you can do is go forward and keep making different stuff, like try to find a way for find creative outlets for things that are you know, just as fun for you. But also I think maybe let yourself have this down period where it feels shitty. You're allowed to feel shitty. It's a thing that I think we don't get told a lot.
Yeah.
You're allowed to feel caught up on this for a little while, you know?
And you're allowed to be blindsided by it.
Totally.
Too. Like, don't – yeah, it's
– it is a weird thing. Yeah.
And related to that, related to the sort of like the intensity of the fandom, because I think that's like a critical aspect of this story, is the intense fandom that is associated with both the McElroy brothers and Griffin's work, you know, both with Griffin and even the stuff he did outside of that, like this demand that has been pervasive for you know, proof or receipts, just try putting yourself in the shoes of. You know, the women that felt the need to share something as this sort of snowballed forward, like what it feels like to like this idea of, like, why wasn't it, if this was known for a while and sort of whispered, why didn't it come out sooner? It's like imagine being the person to step forward in a community in which someone is beloved and being the one person to sort
not
of
not just beloved, but beloved and
for a very specific reason of like they are an inclusive, you know, social justice.
This is what a good man looks like.
This is what a good man looks like. Exactly.
And being the one person to come forward and say, well, you know, 4 years ago this happened to me, like that is a very scary thing to do, especially when that's probably the reason you might have gotten involved was because you were a fan of that person. Like there's so many complicated reasons that someone doesn't come forward.
Unlike the shitty people in Gamergate, because he felt like he was actually a part of the community that was – like he felt like he was part of the community and not just somebody who was making videos, right? Because he felt like someone who you could trust. And like that's the part that second step is just like the fucking worst bit of it.
And that's why this stuff happens the way it does, where it becomes a snowball. And, you know, the, like women I've been talking to, you know, related to all of this stuff, like the reason those people start to feel comfortable coming forward is because other people came forward.
Yes.
It like builds a wall that they can all hold on to and and feel as though they're not one target that's going to get hit on one side from an intense fan community in which you'll have certain actors that don't want to believe it and want to tear down that person. And then, you know, there's the very real Gamergate side of this in which the folks that are still involved in that sort of their own communities are using this as a way to drive a wedge between other existing communities in which one person comes forward and then starts taking it from two different sides in a way that is really intense, is personal, and given the potential trauma involved for those people when they experience the thing and then having to performative go through that trauma again to explain it to people, like, you just have to let you have to let that go. Like, the curiosity, the desire to see proof is I understand it.
I get the curiosity. Like, even beyond or even before, I would say, oh, I want proof. I think there are, for a lot of people, just like, oh, tell me what happened.
Right.
I'll believe what you tell me. Just tell me what happened. I get that curiosity. I get it because one of the things that's happened over the last week or the last 4 days has been people have come to us privately and said, hey, this, and this. And like, oh, shit. Like, I thought I had a good picture of this.
Yes.
I did not have a good picture of this. I thought and that also is part of how more people can come out and feel comfortable coming out to build this wall, to say, like, hey, here is the brick wall that is from all of our little bricks makes up a bigger picture of what happened here or what sort of things were happening, is because suddenly people can come out and say, like, oh, she came out and told her story. They came out and told their story. I can continue to tell the story, because part of the story isn't just this one thing happened and this one thing happened. It's this stream of things happened. This whole set of things happened, and the scope is the story in some sense.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
It reminds me a lot, and I keep going back to YouTube to some degree because I was in a fan community years ago. Alex Day is the guy who I keep coming back to, who I thought was just like the sweetest dude on the internet, who was just like, boy, what a nice guy. Like, fluffy hair, like cardigans, like very presented as being the sort of person who, if I was in a room with him, I would not have to pretend to be more macho than I was. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, the sort of person who has moved past alpha male bullshit. The sort of person who did lots of videos with women, who he was friendly with, like flirty, but very like boy next door again, like you said. And then like the charges came to him, or you know, that revealed that, you know, there were allegations made about sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault that were like devastating at the time, because it was just, oh, he took complete advantage of this image to hurt people. And it's like, oh, I used to watch every one of the videos that this dude put out. Now I'm not going to – I can't even look at him. And also, it was weird. He, like, shaved all his hair off as if to lean in. It was the worst.
Oh,
Like,
Jesus, yeah.
One of those things where
– But
I think for a lot of people, this is going to be a moment for them to remember what their relationship to celebrity and to content creation in the modern era looks like – what it looks like.
I think this is also really illustrative of why adopting the vocabulary of codes of law for your standards for, like, you hold people for, like, interpersonal relationships and expectations within a community is really inappropriate. Like, innocent until proven guilty, or the presumption of innocence is something you are legally entitled to under our code of laws, and there's a really specific meaning and intent for courtroom proceedings, for criminal court proceedings, not even civil law, but criminal proceedings. And you see the same thing happening with, like, how censorship gets bandied about.
Totally.
And the thing is, these are legal statutes that exist for a certain reason, but communities, people, businesses, anything happening on the interpersonal level doesn't need to be held to that standard, and arguably shouldn't. There's a lot of stuff that you will never be able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, you know, is truly, like, problematic or sketchy, however you want to phrase it. But there's a lot of stuff you're never going to be able to, like prove to that standard.
Right.
Doesn't mean that communities are not allowed to reach a conclusion and decide how they want to proceed from there based on the facts and based on things that maybe haven't been, like, outed in a court of law, but are
criminal. That's the other thing here, right? Is that, like, a community can decide and a business can decide, like, oh, the behavior you're doing is not behavior I align with. Like, this is not sex positivity. This is sexual manipulation. This is, you know, throwing your power around unjustly. In the same way that, like if you started, Danielle, if you started giving away any Steam code that we received just to, like, random people you knew, and I got wind of that, and I was like, Danielle, why are you doing that? Like, what are you doing if you're just giving, like, those are for coverage. You have to use those for coverage.
I'm Steam code Santa Claus.
No, that's not
my new thing.
It's not allowed. And then you kept doing it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I have to take some sort of action.
It's an issue.
Here. It's an issue. Yeah. It's a wildly different issue.
Yes, yes.
It's a much lower stakes issue. But it is a sort of thing where, like, there are things. It's not criminal. I wouldn't sue you. I wouldn't bring you to court. I wouldn't.
Right.
There's nothing that would happen in that. But there are ways. There are ways and reasons to kind of police is, like, the wrong word here, but, like, to decide, like, who do you want to represent you?
To make business decisions.
To what degree is someone a liability? And to make not even just business decisions, but also I think about our moderation teams that do an incredible job on our forums and on our fan Discord, where it's like, well, this person isn't doing anything illegal, but they're making this space hostile for the rest of the people here. They are, like, acting in bad faith. They are, like, not using, you know, content warnings when they put stuff in the forums or on the chat. Like, there are all sorts of reasons why you can say, I'm distancing myself from these people. And it often doesn't have to be about, like, I have receipts. It can literally just be the stuff that is here that is not a smoking gun is enough for us to make that decision. And it is tough.
The one thing I would want to say. At the end. No, yeah. We're at the end. There's obviously an ongoing conversation. But
right.
It's okay to be horny. It's okay to be sexy.
Totally.
It's okay to be sex positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to flirt within certain boundaries and to have boundaries and to communicate about boundaries. And it's real good to know where those boundaries are and real good to communicate with the people that you're talking to about these things.
And, like, frankly, if you feel like someone is using your sex positivity to get something from you, like...
Yeah.
I don't know if hearing these words helps at all, but, like, draw that line. Yeah.
Your boundaries. If you're young and you maybe haven't had all of the education in the world about this stuff, which I don't think most Americans do, have great sex ed about consent
and necessarily not.
And about what boundaries are and what they should be and what you're comfortable with. So that's the sort of thing I would really urge you to seek out some good resources on how to sort of
And that's
those
hopefully
things out.
One of, like, the small positives, and when these situations occur, is it's instructive to understand these dynamics and to see, like, if that's happening to you, maybe that can, you know, you see these exchanges, you see how this plays out, and you can better recognize what may be happening in your life or your friend's life, or, you know, just you seeing how it plays out in other scenarios can give people a template to better understand how things play out in other scenarios.
Totally. I mean, like, that's like, you even look at something just like bad flirting, right? Like, white boys texting is, like, a thing that on its face is just a funny collection of shitty dudes who are bad at flirting. But it also ends up being a resource that lets people know, oh, this is, like, the sort of behavior that exists in the world. I'm not expected to listen when someone says send nudes.
Is imposing certain things.
I don't have
to
be. It's not sex negative to determine the degree to which I want to, you know, hook up with somebody or to flirt with them or to whatever, right? Like, you can both be, like, extremely sex positive and also draw hard boundaries.
And be uncomfortable with something.
Totally.
You're always allowed to be uncomfortable. Yeah.
Sex safely. That's all I'm saying.
Sex
out there.
Safely.
Like, let yourself be in control of those situations.
Absolutely.
If you can be, you know? Don't be afraid of being in control.
That's right.
I slam my fist on the table.
Don't be afraid of being in control of your own sex life.
Right. Or consensually letting go of control.
Consensually let go of control, but that is negotiated. Make sure that's negotiated and you're comfortable.
We should just have a show.
I'm really confused right now.
There's some good resources for you, Patrick.
Am I in control right now?
Let me... Good sex positive.
Yes. It's a collaborative sense of control on this call right now.
Okay. All right.
We'll put it in the show notes.
The show what?
The show notes.
Okay.
I don't know why I said it like that. I didn't mean to say it like that.
All right. I think we've worked our way through this. We know people still have questions about this. We know that there are people who are in a position now where no amount of words from us will make them feel more comfortable about the stuff that they watched and the stuff that they loved. And I know that there are people who are listening right now who are like, no, fuck you. Like, show me the receipts still.
Right.
I just want you to be open-hearted about the people who are targeted. Like, that is really what it comes down to for me, the people who were harassed. It takes so much courage to step forward and say anything, even privately, even to a friend,
yes,
even alone.
Even
say,
vaguely.
Even vaguely. Even like, oh, that guy. That it takes courage to say that when you know that other people like him so much. And like, so, you know, for those people, if you have been in one of those situations, like, I applaud your bravery. And if you're in one of those situations and you can't feel like you can come forward, I also, you know, I'm rooting for you, not so that one day you can, but so that you can at least find peace and like decide what you want to do and
absolutely
not feel like you're living in fear. It fucking sucks. So it is one of those things that to some degree felt inevitable in our community that we would have to face one of these because it happens in so many other communities. I think I held out hope that by being that the media organization side of this would prevent what happened in YouTube, what happened in other less – it happened in Tumblr. It happened in LiveJournal back in the day. People with big LiveJournals used to throw that weight around, believe it or not, to be shitty. And, like, it always will happen. It always will. There will always be shitty people who take advantage of power so long as there's power and not enough processes to keep that power checked. But I at least hope that, like, this has been a learning experience for us inside of this community. I don't know. Any other big final words? I'm going to pivot to the end of the show now. Thanks to Bowen.
I'm going
to
modify my ending today, too. So.
Are you?
Yeah.
What are you modifying?
I'm just going to say be good.
Oh, that's good.
I think be good to other people.
That's a good one.
Be good to other people.
We'll come back. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You can find us on the internet at waypointadvice.com. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can find me at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klubbock.
Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
Danielle.
At Danielle R.I.
And what is it? I guess actually shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Shout-outs to Rob, our audio producer now, who has begun producing the podcast for us. And shout-outs to you for listening to the high highs and low lows of the August 7th
Waypoint Radio.
Jesus. What do we tell them, Danielle?
Tell them to be good and be good to other people.
Sounds good. Peace.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.